Carol Carman. Welcome to number 8 in a series of occasional podcasts from Grunty Fennery, home of all things Grunty Fen, including the website dennisofgruntyfen.co.uk, where you can learn more about the world of Grunty Fen and visit the online shop for recordings, books, maps and greetings cards. To celebrate the festive season, we're bringing you a free episode from Christmas 1993, when Dennis gave Mr. South a Christmas hamper. Bet you can't wait to find out what's in that. But the big news is that Mr. South turned 86 this year, and so all of us at Grunty Fennery clubbed together to buy him a present. And we got him a new archivist, a young chap by the name of Ian, who's helping us with transferring the old Dennis episodes from tape to digital format. Ian knows rather a lot about Grunty Fen, and later on you can hear him being tested on his knowledge by Mr. South. So, to celebrate that birthday, we're releasing three new collections for you. Archives 12, Scab. Archives 13, Great Harm. And Archives 14, Little Harm. They're all available now on our website, dennisofgruntyfen.co.uk. And if you'd like to get them in time for Christmas, then buy early, as Fred Pontin never actually said. All the episodes are from 1993, and it's the time when Mr. South first encounters a warm bucket, first encounters Adrian, and also first encounters the Book of Ezariah. Plus, he sounds at his most gloriously snobbish when Dennis tells him about his experience with the Americans. You'll find out why there's a standard lamp in the Great Puddle, and what's rife up Pious End. Plus why Beryl Burgess didn't want to get her mouse damp, and what was bedded in the lino. Such treats for you. We warn you now, though, these collections cover such varied topics as African violets, a slither, the string on a yo-yo, pong, writhing, ooh, the Duchess of Albemarle, illicit liquor, Hopalong Cassidy, divine beds, knitted bathing drawers and Mrs. Sharman's corsets. Not to mention snuffing and pricking, snogging, an emergency poe, fug and shag, frittering, mounties, guano, a gillie's boffy, two long, one short and a scrape, blandishments, cowlicks, linseed oil putty and a final thrust. Now, I bet you're ready for a bit of sensible conversation now, aren't you? So here's Mr. South, a couple of months ago, in conversation with our new archivist, Ian, and their chat will be followed by that free Dennis episode about the Christmas hamper. Enjoy it.
Ian, it does my poor old heart good to meet somebody who, if anything, knows even more about Grunty Fen than I do. And there's a great gap in years between us. Shall we be honest? I am 85, nearly 86. How old are you?
I'm 48, nearly 49.
Right, we're both nearly people.
Yeah.
Yes. So, that I mean, you're almost half my age. And I'm just tickled pink that you are so deeply into Dennis of Grunty Fen. How did it happen to you? You look such a nice young man.
I discovered Dennis in a local newspaper a long, long time ago.
Do you mean it was wrapped around fish and chips?
Or? No, it was. He had a little column every week in the free paper.
Oh, yes.
It was the Town Crier, I think it was. And then I discovered a note at the bottom that he was on the radio. So
is that how it happened?
That's how it happened.
God, yes, I can remember we wrote that column week after week for several years. We used to give advice to people. And I remember once we had to say, what was your lucky stone? And the answer for some people was curb. Anyway, that's a complete digression. So you decided to start listening to, what, the radio or to tapes or what?
I think I may have seen Dennis at a steam rally, a local steam rally before that, and then found out that he was on, and you and yourself were on the radio every Sunday. So that's when I started to listen.
Can you remember the early episodes, the ones you listened to?
It was probably the mid-90s when I started listening. I just remember thinking, what on earth is this? But I liked the world that was created. It was very detailed, and you could almost imagine this world of Grunty Fen, all these strange characters, this strange behaviour, and I was hooked from then on.
Because, I mean, at times it was hard to believe, and also really rather disgusting, wasn't it?
I think that's what appealed to me.
Well, do you know, I mean, you were older, but I know at that time boys of 8 or 9 loved the sort of filth and disgusting side of it. I'm not meaning...
Well, that was probably my mental age. I was probably about 18 and 19 when I first started to listen. But so I never wanted to grow up, so...
I've never grown up.
And I still haven't.
And I don't want to. Do you know what two of my school reports at primary school said? General comments by the head teacher. Thinks he's funny. Well, you do. You think Dennis O'Gruntyfenn is funny.
Definitely, yeah.
And you have this incredible memory of episodes. I mean, you remember things that I have totally forgotten. I've been trying to trick you into failing to remember something, and not only have you remembered it. Like, I'll give an example. There was a character called Mr... Who's the man on the bicycle? Mr. Sparkle.
Mr. Sparkle.
You remembered his full real name.
Sydney Pigeon.
Sydney Pigeon? No, never in a month of Sundays would I have remembered that. And yet I probably invented it. But do you know, we did a... How many characters do you think we could name in the whole Gruntyfenn series, the invented characters in the whole series? Have a guess.
It could be about 30, 40. I don't know. There's a lot.
About 90.
Really?
Yeah. We reckoned somewhere between 80 and 90 people. All of them we went back to, but not very often. But there were 80 or 90. Tell me one of the characters you find, I'm having to phrase this carefully, not the funniest, but the most memorable, apart from Dennis himself, obviously, but the sort of character that keeps coming back to your mind, perhaps because they represent somebody in real life.
I think one that just comes to mind at the moment is Slim Fenton, who was the Elvis Presley impersonator, who was the caretaker from Maudie's school, but not when Maudie was at school.
How do you remember that? I have forgotten it completely. I probably invented him. Slim Fenton.
Slim Fenton, yeah. He was pestered by the nuns in one particular episode.
Oh, the nuns.
I mean, the nuns as a general character, I mean, you never... I think you hear a few names mentioned, like Sister Elastica and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah, yeah. She came from a real nun. I knew a real nun in Cambridge called Sister Scholastica, who had a robin's nest in her bicycle basket, so she couldn't use her bicycle all summer. And so from Scholastica, we came to Elastica. I know that I'm always trying to test your memory, and I bet you won't remember this, but there was a circumstance in which a whole lot of nuns captured somebody, and he ended up gibbering in a sideshow at Yarmouth. I can't go back through the whole catalogue, because there's 17 years of tapes, but it happened that somebody who was captured by the nuns who were, what were they called, the
Little Sisters of Perpetual Availability.
Thank you very much. Yes, the Little Sisters of Perpetual Availability. And he ended up... It was the bus driver.
Nigel German.
I think it was Nigel German. Oh, come on. This conversation can go off the rails completely. Most of those recordings were made in the... Well, you tell me, because you're the expert. 80s and 90s. It was 17 years.
Late 80s, 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah. Do you think that... Are they relevant today? Are they still funny today?
I think so, yeah. Definitely.
And yet, humour does fade, doesn't it? Comedy gets out of date.
But then it was never of its time anyway, so I don't think... I think... If something is contemporary, then it can date. But if it's not contemporary, then it never dates. Some of the references may date, but the general humour.
Yes, I mean, Mrs. Jeffries, the presumptuous, snobbish... I've just remembered something. Where was snobbish, presumptuous, socially ambitious Mrs. Jeffries born?
The isolation hospital.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was born in that little bungalow that looked like Hitler on a bit of concrete. Is that where she was brought up?
That's what I've heard.
Well, you're probably right. She was born at the isolation hospital. Because it was converted to something else. It's had several conversions.
It's had several conversions, yeah.
I know this is getting tedious for you, but I'm just amazed at how much you know about Granty Fenn. I wonder how many other people remember so much. They didn't have to have been listening on the radio. A whole lot more have joined us since we've been on cassettes originally and then CDs, and you can hear quite a bit on his website. But I wonder how many people remember more than you. Do you know what we seriously ought to do? And you would help me on this. What we could do is have a sort of Granty Fenn Night, N-I-G-H-T. What was the name of the knight whose name was remembered on the brass? This is a question, I'm interrupting myself. In Granty Fenn Church, there was a memorial brass on the floor, and it had been cleaned so often by the ladies that the name was no longer legible. So the dead knight was known as...
Sir Hugo de Wassername.
Do you know, I really dislike you. I mean, your memory is amazing. I've lost my track now.
It's because his surname was Brastoff.
Do you know, you really stumped me. I mean, how many other people know as much as you, or even half as much as you do? I seriously am asking anybody who listens to this to have a bit of fun, and we could have an event. There'll be prizes. I'm not prepared to commit myself on the value of these prizes.
Maybe a net of sprouts, something like that.
A net of sprouts.
Donkey muck.
Yes. Oh, that was it. Oh, God. The trouble is, with conversation with you, my head goes skidding off, because there used to be these raffles in which the top prize was a Mercedes-Benz.
And it was always won by somebody who clearly didn't exist.
Well, it was somebody called R. Smith High Street, Venezuela.
And then the prizes dropped. The value dropped somewhat from the first prize to a net of sprouts. Yes. Donkey muck. Yeah. Sink tidies, of course.
Oh, I've given up. I know you've got the power to make my head go sideways. I was going to ask you questions about Sir Hugo de Wassername, but let me just think of any more about the church. Why did the church organ at Granty Fenn not work very well at certain times of year?
Well, most organs blow, but the Granty Fenn organ sucked. So it was full of mothballs, mice, bats.
Something else really substantial. I don't want to give it away, but round about every spring, it was very hard to play the organ, but nobody wanted to cure it because of something that happened. I've got you.
I don't know.
Owls nested in the organ and blocked the pipes. You should have known that.
That was the Rolf and the Claydon wedding, when the owl went in there. I remember now. When the vows were, do you take this lady and you get it?
You're right. And what distinguished the two Granty Fenn families that related them to a popular gravy substance?
One family had knock knees and the other family had bow legs.
So when they stood in a row...
They spelled OXO.
Yeah. I'll abandon the church. This is just to test your knowledge.
A lot of people have done.
Yes, you're right. Yes, we abandoned the church like everybody else. Right. After the football season, Granty Fenn football team, who were called?
The Academicals?
Yes, Granty Fenn
Academicals.
Yep. They made a little bit of profit by selling a substance.
From the bottom of the bath.
The bottom of the bath that they'd been bathing in.
Which was really good for plants. I think it was scraped out.
Yes, it was the sludge from the bottom of the...
Everything that had built up over the week. Because they only had a bath when they played a football match.
Yeah, I think actually they only emptied the bath fully once a season. And that's why there was such sludge at the bottom. But you may be right. I could easily be wrong. By what means was... In cricket, we're now talking about... How was the crowd kept in touch with the score?
I can't remember.
You know it. This is the way I've asked the question. Yes.
The scores that were taken from the church, the numbers from the church,
the hymns. The hymn board.
And they used to borrow from the church.
Do I give in, Ian. It's amazing. Tell me, just describe, because it does my old heart good to know that I made somebody happy. Here you are, you're a modern man, you're involved in a scientific industry, you're nothing like me at all. Why do you listen to Dennis? What do you get from it?
I think the main thing is escapism. I just like to be transported to a different world. And it is very different. but there are some things that make sense. There are some strange things that you listen to and think, that makes more sense, actually. I wish I was there.
I wish I was there.
Yeah.
So do I. Okay, right. Ian, I've asked you a lot of silly questions, and you're absolutely brilliant in your answers. I haven't completely stumped you on anything, and you stumped me. But I've been asking all these questions. You ask me something. You can be as rude as you like. No, I withdraw that. You can be fairly rude. Go on, do it.
So what did you most enjoy about making those episodes?
Funnily enough, I think my answer is very close to yours. You found it a means of escape, a totally different world, and so did I, because I was still a professional journalist while I was doing this nonsense. And also, it taught me not how to laugh, but how not to laugh. Because sometimes when we were recording something, some of the gags that we were building up to made us both laugh. I know it's vain, but we were laughing at our own jokes, which is supposed to be very bad manners. And to avoid corpsing was a great struggle, because Pete and I, bless his soul, we used to laugh so much sometimes that we had to keep stopping and starting again and wiping our eyes and trying to start. And one of the cases, I can't remember fluently the whole thing, but Dennis has produced a whole lot of old postcards of Granny Fenn, and Mr. South is very pompously looking at them and finds one of a chapel, a religious building. And Mr. South says, I don't remember seeing that. And Dennis looks at him and says, oh, yes, that was the chapel of eternal endurance and perpetual survival. And I say, oh, really? Really? Where is it? Dennis says, no, that fell down. And we both laughed like drains at our own joke and had to go back up to 5 times to try to do it without laughing. Anyway, often I used to have to say to people, "What I built up this situation." And then I'd say, you know, what does Dennis say?
He just brings it down.
He does, and he just says something really unkind quite often. I remember we used to do that advice thing. And I can remember some woman had written from Lincoln to say that she'd fallen in love with her sister's boyfriend. It was a very complicated love story. And what shall I do? And I turned to Pete and say, well, now, what is your advice to this poor lady? And he'd say, she made her bed, she must lie in it. And she absolutely refused to offer any comfort at all. That was Dennis, absolutely. I was always asking him, what would Dennis say? And it was never anything elaborate. It was all a big letdown, dragging back to cruel reality.
I just had a thought. There's one episode where you take Dennis to a concert, and he's rustling around for his space. Yeah, is that? And he thinks he recognises somebody. He's, Barry, is that you? And there's this.
And he's brought some sandwiches or something.
Yeah. I've got one for you. He's whispering, but he's so loud.
No. That was recorded by Carol Carmen, one. And we found a recording of an orchestra tuning up.
Oh, it's pitiful, isn't it?
And so in the background, you've got the violins and the flutes and things tuning up. And Dennis says, what did he say? That's painful.
It's pitiful. I think that's actually when the music started. I think he says it's pitiful.
Well, no, but he says, but he treats the tuning up as if part of the concert. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And then the conductor comes out and goes, oh, we got a conjurer. So it's like a variety show. Oh, another one. No, he's the lead violinist. terrible dandruff.
Doesn't he drop something and it rolls under a seat?
Probably a bottle of Vimto or something like that.
Yeah. But you know, there was one episode involving music and a concert that actually had nice people in tears. Sally Field, who had so many children, she wasn't sure how many, who was married to...
Slippery Sam.
Slippery Sam, thank you.
Ne'er-do-well Slippery Sam.
Ne'er-do-well, who's most of his time in Bedford Jail.
Yep.
And the only thing that saved the reputation of the family was little Sally.
Haley. Haley! Yeah, she was the pianist. Goodness. She was taught by... Miss Edna, wasn't she?
Miss Edwards.
I always get the names mixed up.
I can't remember how we tell the story. Whether it was in Dennis's words, I think it was.
And he takes her to Cambridge on the back of his bike with a load of apples to sell to the toffs.
That's right. And so there's the big festival in Cambridge, and this little girl is performing, who comes out of the fen... Not wearing the right clothes.
Dennis's gran has been advised at what time she's going to play, so she will say a prayer at that time, and then somebody dropped out, and they were worried about the times being mixed up. But
that's right, goodness, you do remember. You really do. But I know that eventually Dennis describes how this little girl appears on this huge stage in this huge city and wins.
Yeah. I think she has a false start. She's really nervous.
Yeah. If you can make people laugh, great. If you can make them cry, that's even greater.
Well, a lot of the best sitcoms do both.
They do both.
They have that mixture.
Yeah. And there is something tragic about Dennis anyway, isn't there?
Yeah.
But there's more tragic about Mr. South, for the simple reason that Dennis always wins.
Yeah.
So that's not tragic. Mr. South always loses. That's tragic. Those last episodes we made... where we're working on the voiceovers, and Mr. South, who's always very pompous, Mr. South has always wanted to prosper in the voiceover industry, and to his absolute fury, Dennis gets the job
because people want the voice of the common man, and you can't get more common than Dennis.
Yes, right. It's about, nobody's more common than Dennis. So sometimes it's almost political, isn't it? A little bit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was left wing. It's just. Oh, yes, I've just thought of that wonderful politician. I bet you don't know this one. There was a politician who was very successful in national politics, but trying to represent Grundy Fen, who used to speak at Grundy Fen. And he had a little lectern, and the woman who looked after him always had a sandwich underneath the lectern in case he was peckish. I want to ask you what party he represented. But he always agreed, if whatever...
For the polite party.
Yes, the polite party.
Yeah.
Oh, you are unbeatable. You really are. Ian, how about writing a few episodes, eh?
I could do that, probably.
Yeah, except we can't get...
give it a go.
We can't get Pete back, can we? Oh, well. Long may you continue to love. And I'm serious in saying to people of all ages that if you see any merit... in having some sort of event in which we vie with one another for remembering obscure bits and pieces about the Grundy Fen saga, which went on for 17 weary years, then let's know, and maybe we'll be able to fix something. And by fix, I mean I win.
17 years seems a lot longer.
Oh, ho, ho! That's the last time I interview you, Buggy.
Miss Seuss, on behalf of me gran and me, we'd like you to accept this small token of our heartfelt gratitude.
Oh, Dennis, is this for me?
Yeah, a couple older boxes.
A cardboard box.
I can't get a grip on me banjo, the
boy. A cardboard box. Very, very kind of you.
We'll take it then.
Oh, yes, it's a carnation milk box. A whole box of evaporated milk for me. Well, I'm overwhelmed, Dennis.
That ain't
milk.
Look inside while I sing me song. Fen, tigers got dewdrops on their nose. Fen, tigers got webs between their toes. Fen tigers catch eel and grunt old fight. But blast that wind come off the fen, that'll blow you there and back again. Blast that wind come off the fen, that'll blow you off your bike.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. Well, now let's see what you've given me here in this cardboard box. Whatever it is, Dennis, I want to say at the outset I'm most grateful to you and your granny for your great kindness in even thinking of me at this season.
That's one of her hampers, you see, isn't it?
Really? It's one of your granny's hampers?
No, Miss Edwards at the post office.
Really? Mm. A hamper from Grunty Fen Post Office?
Yeah.
Oh, Dennis, this is a great honour.
That is, Miss Seth. That is a great honour.
What can I say?
There's people around these parts save up all year so they can have one of Miss Edwards' Christmas hampers, you know.
Oh, well, Dennis, I truly am overwhelmed by your kindness.
Shilling a week they pay into her Christmas club for one of her hampers, you know.
Me a shilling a week, you say?
You're getting a whole hamper for nothing there,
well,
you know.
As you say, Dennis, and as I say, I am honoured. It is an honour indeed. Thank
it's
you.
A huge honour, Miss Edwards.
Yes, well, thank you again, Dennis, for...
Well, go on, then. Go
what?
On.
What? Well, Dennis, I've said thank
well,
you.
Well, open it.
What, open it now.
See what you got. Go on.
Right, but I mean, it's a big box, a hamper, isn't it? Certainly very, very, very full.
Marvellous value, Miss Ethan. I thought that'd surprise you, you know.
Yes, well, possibly startled would be more the word.
What do you think then, eh?
Well, I'm just trying... Dennis, tell me, upon what principle or philosophy does Miss Edwards decide what to include in her customers' Christmas hampers?
Oh, that weren't Miss Edwards.
Really? It wasn't Miss Edwards? She didn't fill the hampers herself?
Well, not this year, no.
Who did?
Laid low with the flu, she were, you
really? Say. Really? Really? Oh, so who did the job for her?
And Miss Edna.
Well, her sister, your former fiancée, Miss Edna.
Laid low with the flu, too, she were and all, you know.
So who did pack this hamper, Dennis? Dennis. Dennis.
You safe? I'm your man in a crisis.
Dennis, you did it, didn't you? You've been filling Miss Edwards' Christmas Club hampers this year, haven't you? Oh, I
Miss
say.
Safe, I think I can say, without fear of contravention, that I stepped onto the beach.
You stepped onto the beach?
Saved her from embarrassment, Miss Edwards.
Dennis, I think you mean you stepped into the breach. Stepped on. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It was very neighbourly of you. Now, let's see what you decided to put in.
Known for her value, she is. Famous her Christmas hampers are now.
What sort of things are
you... Oh, the little luxuries what people round here crave for.
Really? Wait a minute. What's this here? Mm. Oh, it's a box of sweets. Oh, that's nice, Dennis. Mm. A box
licorice
of
sorts, isn't it?
Licorice sorts?
Yeah.
Don't you mean licorice all sorts, don't you?
Ah, well, see, Miss Edwards, she's prey to these here smart salesmen what come round offering her sort of cut-price confectionery and that, you see. This young fella come round in his smart little car and his hair all sort of smarmed down, and Miss Edwards, she was sort of carried away with his charm, you see.
Dear.
Well, she didn't think to check, you see. That weren't till people started coming back after they'd bought some, you see.
Well, after they bought some of these licorice all sorts?
Yeah, Miss Edwards. They was all the same. They weren't all sorts. They was all Pontefract cakes, weren't they?
See, how irritating for poor Miss Edwards.
Well, she never thought of checking them, did she? You wouldn't, would you? I mean, if someone sold you a tin of 3-in-1 oil, I mean, you wouldn't check to see if there was two missing, would you?
Well, I suppose not. No. Well, let's see what else is in this... Whoops, bountiful cornucopia of Yuletide joy. Now, what's this? What's this here?
That's a mustard poultice, isn't it?
A mustard poultice?
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Mustard poultice?
There's a bread poultice underneath there too and all of this.
That's not very Christmassy, is it? A mustard poultice and a bread poultice.
Well, that's very popular around here, they are, Christmas time, you know.
Really?
Yeah, mustard poultice. Well, I'll go a treat with a bit of boiled bacon, you know.
People eat the poultices?
Well, see, that ain't quite so tart as Coleman's mustard, you see, is it? See, a bread poultice, that's very nice with a turkey or a capon or something like that.
Dennis, what are these enormous rubber bands here?
Well, that's one of the most popular items they are, you know. Nice set of replacement rings for Kilner jars, you
really?
See.
And this enormous paper bag, very tough, large paper bag.
A spare bags for a goblin vacuum cleaner, isn't it?
In a Christmas hamper, really?
Well, see, Miss Edwards, she's got 75 gross of them,
oh,
you see.
Another smart young salesman.
Trouble is...
What's the trouble, Dennis?
Trouble is, ain't no one room this way got a goblin vacuum cleaner, is there?
In that case, Dennis, why include them in the hamper?
Well, they're still very useful.
Oh, Dennis, forgive me, but I...
Many's the time someone come in the post office looking for envelope or something like that, Miss Edwards, she always asks, what do you want it for? And likely as not, see, goblin bag's perfect for the job, ain't it?
Really? Can't imagine what these long, thin, tough paper bags could possibly be for postal purposes. I mean, what could you fit in them?
Well, mad guards.
Mad guards?
Well, boy, mad guards. People around here was pushing a pair of mad guards anywhere. They never used nothing else, do they?
Really?
You know, always use goblin vacuum bags for posting mad guards, we do.
Really? What's this in the cardboard box here? What's that?
That's an Easter egg.
An Easter egg? In a Christmas hamper, Dennis? I suppose it's all ready for Easter 1994. Is that the idea?
Well, as a matter of fact, them Easter eggs, what I put in the hampers...
Yes, yes.
Well, as a matter of fact, they was all ready for Easter 1974.
You mean these Easter eggs that you put in the Christmas hampers are 20 years old?
Well, Miss Edwards, she was afraid they wouldn't make it the next Easter. She thought she'd better put them in the Christmas hampers, you see.
Yeah, well, I think the lady... Oh, great.
They're all right. They're still all right. If you rub that sort of white mould stuff off on your sleeve, they come up nice and brown underneath,
really?
As good as
really?
New, you know.
Really, really. Mm. Ah, now, look, Dennis, look here. Here's something quite desirable.
You found the coat hanger, haven't you?
Well, very pretty. It is true. Now that is a very pretty coat hanger. Yeah, I could give that to my wife, a very attractive padded lady's coat hanger in ruched lilac satin. I expect it's scented too. Oh yes, here's the label. It is scented. The label, Devon Violets.
Yeah, well, you smell it.
Yeah.
That's not exactly Devon Violets, is it?
Well, no. I mean, to be candid...
That's more sort of Aladdin pink, really, isn't it?
Aladdin pink,
see, she stored the scented coat hangers a bit close to where she keep her loose paraffin, you see, and that big tank for the people what come round with their jugs, you see.
Yes, I see.
And over the years, the Devon Violets, well, see, some of them kids, they're none too careful when their mum send them down for a jug of paraffin, and that slop over
I'm not sure my wife's going to want her cashmere coat to smell of Aladdin pink, Dennis.
Well, I wouldn't get a vermin in it.
Yeah, but even so, Dennis, I just...
See, that's more of a deterrent, isn't it? That don't just keep the moth out your garments,
really,
do it?
Really, well, it does something else. What else does this do?
Well, they save your wardrobe. That would never suffer from woodworm in your wardrobe as long as you got one of Miss Edwards' scented hangers,
would
it?
Well, let us continue our exploration of this Grant FM Post Office Christmas hamper. What's in this little packet?
4 ounces of slug pellets.
Really?
Yeah.
Slug pellets?
Yeah.
Oh, that really is Christmassy.
No, don't think that'd kill them.
Well, Christmas slug pellets wouldn't kill slugs.
See, it's a bit past what you might call this Best Boy date, isn't it?
Which was?
February 1964.
Yeah, well, I agree, they are perhaps a little unlikely to kill slugs.
But there's a good chance that'd slow them down a bit, you know. Yeah. See, that might go a bit rubbery, don't it?
Dennis, what in heaven's name is this?
Spare brushes for a Eubank.
Really? These are spare brushes for a Eubank carpet sweeper.
Well, see, Reenie down the bull, she's ever so grateful when there's a set of Eubank replacement brushes for her carpet sweep.
Really?
She do the walls of the saloon, you see.
The walls?
Yeah.
It's a Eubank carpet sweeper. It's for the floors.
Ah, well, she's got that very heavy flock wallpaper, ain't she?
Oh, no, look, here. Ah, at last. Here's something more Christmassy. Some tinned foods. Oh. But Dennis, they've all lost their labels, haven't they? How do you know what's in them? How do you know?
Well, that's a blooming damp in Miss Edwards' shed. You see, the labels, they sort of peel off, don't they?
Yeah, so how do you know what's in the tins?
Well, to the trained ear, Miss Heath.
Really?
That's quite easy, really. Hand me them tins, what you got in your hand.
What's that?
Irish stew.
Really?
Tomato soup.
How can you tell?
Well, I'm not sure if that's plain tomato soup or cream of tomato. It's difficult.
What about this one here? Try that.
Scarcely any movement there.
Well, what is it?
Pilchards.
Pilchards. And this one?
This one's carrots. Yeah.
Nice to know I'd have pilchards and carrots on the menu for Christmas, I must say. Dennis, I really am very grateful for pilchards.
And this one's that's cling peaches in heavy syrup.
Oh, really? Oh, thank you.
And that came in after 1977. See, that's when they started using the multi-grade syrup, you know. You can tell by the sound, you see.
Really? I look forward to that, the multi-grade syrup in my cling peaches. What's this, Dennis? This is just an empty carton. There's nothing in this one here. It's an empty carton, Dennis.
That ain't empty.
But Dennis, it is empty.
That's tapioca flakes.
It's empty.
Look through the little cellophane window in the side of the carton there. Go on.
That's exactly what I am doing. I'm looking through the little cellophane window in the side of the carton. I mean, sorry, Dennis, I don't want to appear ungrateful, but all I can see is the cardboard on the other side.
No, Miss Hazel. Look, hold it up the light and sort of look down so you can see the bottom. See, that's sort of settled, isn't it?
Really? The tapioca flakes have settled.
Yeah, and see, then the damp got in and now they've gone a bit sort of what you might call solid.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah, I can just glimpse the top of a sort of brick of tapioca. Mm,
well, that's good stuff, Miss Heath. It's got a lot of uses. I mean, that's marvellous in a gearbox,
if that's making
a bit of a noise and that. Oh. And look here.
What's this?
There's a can of Blakey's and a nice bit of millet for your budgie in there.
Yes, well, I haven't got a budgie, as a matter of fact, but nevertheless, it's a very kind thought.
And an extra large pie funnel there.
Extra large? It's enormous, Dennis. Yeah. How many people bake a pie 8 inches deep?
And a pack of Zoobs and a card of Kirby Grip.
Yes, very suitable for me. Bald as a cooter. Well, what's this? Oh, yes, well, that's going to be very handy for me. A packet of Rizzler cigarette papers.
Blue Deluxe.
Yeah, Blue Deluxe Rizzler cigarette papers. Thank you so much, Dennis. Oh, the whole thing, a lot of thought has gone into this. Bottle of calamine lotion.
And a fly paper. Yeah. See, all the little luxuries what people look forward to having about them over Christmas, you see,
aren't it? Dennis, all these items of merchandise, are they all things in which Miss Edwards is, as it were, overstocked?
Oh, yeah. She carried vast reserves, Miss Heath. Yeah. Vast reserves.
Yes.
See, look, I tell you, she's prey to them smart salesmen what come round and that, ain't she?
Yes, I suppose that would account for this enamel sink tidy too. Yes.
And this.
Yes. What is that? That contraption of buckles and pads and belts? What on earth is that?
That's one of her abominable belts, Miss Heath.
One of Miss Edwards' abominable belts.
Yeah, there's a surgical appliance for people what got a floating kidney.
Dennis, an abdominal belt, not an abominable
marvellous value of these hampers, Miss Heath. Now, you look at this here, look.
What? Yes. I am looking at it. What is it?
A novelty rat-proof picnic cushion.
Dennis, thank you so much for giving me all these splendid things, and I'll try to think of something to give you in return. Would you sing your goodbye song now, please?
That's all in your life, down go scratching of your poor old head, down go worrying, just go back to bed. That's all in your life and you're a long time dead. That's all in your life. God bless.
Well, thanks, Dennis, for that. Hey, look, before we part, look down the bottom. What's all this dust and grit at the bottom of the Christmas hamper?
Oh, well, that's your loose veg, isn't it?
Loose veg? Oh, the seeds.
Yeah, your early scarlet horn, and your muscle bar, and your calabrese, and your bolt hardy, and your exhibition long pod, and your hollow crown, Miss Heath, and that's your webs wonderful. I mean, you could sort them out one wet Wednesday afternoon when you ain't got much to do, couldn't you?
Well, I'm sure Mr. South never had another Christmas hamper like that one. Thank you for listening to this Grunty Fen podcast. On behalf of everyone at Grunty Fennery and Dennis of gruntyfen.co.uk, we'd like to wish you all the very best of the festive season and thank you for supporting us throughout the year. Without you, we wouldn't be here. So thank you, take care, and that's all in your life.